People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Back in the early 1960s, a proposition to make housing discrimination illegal failed in California. That's hard to believe now, but the failure of State Proposition 14 actually helped galvanize a movement. And in Hayward, California, William Vandenberg, then a professor of physical education at Cal State Hayward, joined a like-minded group of community activists to promote fair and affordable housing. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, where today's guest is Bill Vandenberg, former dean of athletics at the former Cal State Hayward, and one of the founding board members of Eden Housing. Fortunately, Eden's board does not have term limits, as Bill continues to help guide the organization in its 40th year. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you.
It's good to meet you. Tell us a little about the landscape when you first became interested in this issue.
In the northern part of the state, or in the Bay Area, I should say, it was quite forward-thinking. Might even say it was liberal at that time.
It's all relative, right?
It's all relative. And, of course, liberal has a connotation now that some people don't like. But in Southern California, it was exactly the opposite. And I was involved, along with a group of other people, politically, in a sense, with the Democratic Party at the time, as well as with a group of ministers who were nonpartisan but were very active when it comes to issues like open housing. And we all worked on trying to pass Prop 14, which in our area did, but of course it was overwhelmingly defeated down in Los Angeles. So we got together, and we used to meet in all sorts of places trying to figure out what to do next, and finally decided that if we worked with affordable housing, we could have housing that was open, and there would be no system of denial simply because of race, color, or creed. And that's how the whole thought of Eden Housing developed. We also worked closely at that time with the Hayward City Council, which was very good. In fact, had used Eden Housing as the housing authority, so to speak, for the city of Hayward. And that's how we got our start.
What were the big obstacles that you faced initially when you began doing this work for affordable and fair housing?
The biggest obstacle was, of course, lack of funds. And we finally got a federal grant to work with six families in East Oakland. And the idea was that we would rehabilitate their existing homes and use minority contractors. It turned into, we finally did it, and finally were fairly successful in five of the six cases. One of our members of the board was a lawyer, and he saw a family through divorce and through qualifying, unqualifying, qualifying three or four times. Finding minority contractors in the 60s was very, very difficult. But we finally did it and finally managed to move along. And that gave us our start. Then the big start came when the city of Hayward decided that one of the major developers, Jack Brooks from San Leandro, developing an area down off Tennyson, should have part of that of his development, which was massive, as affordable housing. And so one area adjacent to the regular development down there was allocated to Eden Housing. We used Jack Brooks's contractors as plans, although we modified them slightly. We modified them quite a bit when I think about it. I got a new architect in to do it, and then we went ahead and did get some federal money to help pay for that. The city of Hayward was behind us, and the contractors and Mr. Brooks helped too. And so that was Josephine Lum Lodge, and that was our first beginning. I should mention also, one of the things that really helped us in those beginning years, the man who shepherded that family I mentioned, Harold Mefford, was a lawyer to Josephine Lum. And she, in her declining years, was alone and recognized the problem with senior citizens who were alone and were not able to afford safe housing. and open housing. And she bequeathed us then the sum of some $100,000, which really gave us some seed money to work with other groups. We helped the Spanish-speaking Unity Council and some other areas, other people in different areas. And that gave us a start. In fact, it gave us a leg up over a lot of the other beginning nonprofits because we had that source of funds that we could work with.
Funds are always key for nonprofits trying to do this sort of work, in particular when you're trying to purchase land, develop big housing projects. It's interesting to think for younger folks who look around now and see that there's elderly housing everywhere, assisted living facilities and retirement communities. This is really a very new concept. And they're springing up now all over the place. But at one time, it was just assumed that families would take care of their older folks. And that there's been a whole social shift, even for people who do have families, that people would prefer to often maintain independence and live on their own or live with peers.
That's very true. And you know, Hayward, for instance, at one time turned down a housing development that was designed to have in-law units. The other thing that we face even today, I think, and that is a discrimination in terms of economics and where the housing is placed. That oftentimes you'll go into a community and say, oh, yes, we want affordable housing, but in fact they locate that affordable housing about 10 miles away from the core of all activities in land that is cheap, and which is one of the problems that we have, too, in trying to find land that we can afford to make affordable housing and to make the housing itself affordable. But that in turn almost demands in our modern society that these individuals, seniors, have cars and things such as that, and many do not. In fact, one of the things that you want to do is to try to get the seniors involved in the local community because they do contribute to the community. And so you'd like to have them in a place where they can walk to the services they need and get public transportation to go if they want to go to San Francisco or something like that. So there's discrimination in subtle ways sometimes, and that still exists.
And there is this underpinning of the economics involved. Clearly, developers have an opportunity to make a whole lot more money when they build other sorts of housing rather than affordable housing.
That's very true. That's very true. And hopefully, though, within inclusionary clauses and things such as that in the new laws, developers are beginning to recognize the need for affordable housing. And the people who are in affordable housing are, you know, they're like everybody else. They may not have the financial wherewithal of some people, but certainly they can contribute to the causes of the community and to the common good.
Absolutely. And in many cases, and I know this is true for many of the tenants whom Eden Housing has helped over the years, they can save money in an affordable housing situation and then become home buyers.
Exactly. That's one of the things that I always have looked at, that this is really a transitional type housing, that if you can get families in our family affordable housing developments, and they in turn can become wage earners and producing positive effects, and then move on into their own home and open up their space for another person to come in.
Bill, where do you think the greatest progress has been made in the issue of affordable housing over the years?
I think probably the greatest progress, of course, is the numbers of affordable housing developments that have gone up through, particularly here in the Bay Area. When you get into an area that is somewhat forward-thinking in their politics and all, you find a lot of this. I read an article just the other day, being from Seattle originally, on Bellevue, which is a big development on the other side of, on the east side of Seattle, in which now has a tremendous number of high-rises and condominiums and all that, and some person was saying, well, we like affordable housing, but we don't think they really belong here in this area. We want them someplace else. It's not in my backyard again. And that's still a great big problem that we face when we go into the various communities. At Eden, we try to work with the communities from the very beginning. Once the conception, the idea of affordable housing is presented, and the city council says, we want affordable housing, we find an area, and then we will meet with the neighbors and try to work with the neighbors and explain to them exactly what we're doing, show them the designs, because we've won several architectural awards with the quality of our developments. And usually, with this layered type of approach, the progress is significant, and eventually the community comes to support what we're trying to do.
What do you see as the next frontier?
Several. I think that the agencies that support affordable housing have to recognize, particularly in family housing, that the needs are very significant of the individuals who are there, and that those who develop the housing oftentimes cannot finance the services necessary to make those people successful in their lives. And so the federal agencies, state agencies, and private funders hopefully will support services that will enable these people to move ahead rapidly, because you just can't isolate them in affordable housing. And they have a lot of troubles and a lot of worries sometimes. Hopefully their young people will go on, earn scholarships. We were lucky last year in that two of our people from one of the developments got scholarships to Yale. And so these people have the ability to move ahead. They just need assistance.
Excellent. Now, how did a guy whose background was in physical education end up having a lifelong passion for affordable housing?
Probably because my father was the first business agent for the building trades in Seattle back in the 20s. And if you know anything about the Northwest, the IWW and liberal politics up there and such, I grew up in that era. And then in athletics, you get to know people from all walks of life, because now you're looking at a different measurement. And so even though this was in the beginning of the African-American involvement in the game of basketball, as far as the universities were concerned, we had no African-Americans on the teams at the University of Washington when I played there. But in coaching later on, particularly in California, I was at Fresno State and then competed against USF and some of the teams with Bill Russell and some of the other outstanding players who were African-American. And then when I came up here and started the program at California State University Hayward, known then as the Alameda County State College, we started five African-Americans, and that we were one of the few teams in the nation that did that. And those kids are still loyal. They still meet annually. They still talk about the experiences they had. And they're all citizens that have contributed to the welfare that they're owned as well as the community.
Well, the one thing you hear time and again from people who have had the opportunity to live in affordable housing is the difference that it made in their lives, and the way that they were able to take it as an opportunity. And as you say, a transitional housing situation, and then move on to not only do better with their own lives, but give back.
That's true.
Bill Vandenberg, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.